Danielle Berger.
And I'm Rachel Leishman.
And welcome to a very special episode, not one that we thought we would start the new year with.
No.
Our tribute to one of our favorite people, Carrie Frances Fisher.
I was like, what? When you said Frances? No, I was like, Carrie, and then you were like, Frances. I'm like, Fisher, you forgot her name. She's been dead for less than a month and you've forgotten her name.
Carrie F. Fisher, that's her.
No, Twitter. I know. And then, like, I realize now, I'm like, oh, she was saying her middle name. But at first, I was like, girl, we gotta, what are we gonna do?
Well, maybe I'm just that emotional right now.
Her name is Carrie Frances now. It's like, no, her name is Carrie Fisher. God damn. It just, she
you
just.
You can start over if you want.
No, it's okay. I'm on the same page now. Like, at first, I was like, she not been in a month and you forgot.
Fisher's, you forgot her name. Fisher's it's kind of an easy name to remember.
I'm messing with you.
I'm bantering.
Oh, banters for the week.
Did you just make that up?
I did. I should tweet that.
You should.
Banters for the week.
I think Carrie Fisher would like banter, but okay. So I don't know how you want to deal with this, but I think the best way is to, I mean, not that I've ever been to a wake, but I've been to a Shiva, and
I've never been to one of those.
No. Well, I think the big difference is maybe the food. I don't know. But I think it's hard to pay tribute in a way because a lot of people are very upset and sad. Is something that Sharon Horgan said, her co-star and co-writer of Catastrophe, when she wrote this beautiful mm-hmm. thing in The Guardian, was it's hard to pay tribute to someone who is allergic to bullshit.
Yeah.
So I would hope that, you know, sort of in a wake and also to Shiv, it's like you say, you remember the funny parts and the good stuff as well as maybe we can be a little... We can't not be a little melancholy, and hopefully
well,
not.
Well, I mean, I feel like, and I didn't mean this to come off the way it did, but everyone is taking it in the way that's like, thank you, because this was, like, the one of the best tributes, and I didn't mean for it to be that way.
Mm-hmm.
I thought, at first, I was like, oh, I'm being funny, but it also is in a way that, like, I feel like Carrie Fisher would have liked, but then exactly. It turned into, like, a perfect tribute to where I made the joke about Harrison Ford goes into his backyard, he looks up to the sky and says, you just had to tell everyone we slept together before you died,
which
didn't
is
you?
Great.
And then Carrie Fisher appears in the sky like Mufasa and just flips him off.
And yeah. I was like... And so that's what I would hope, like, maybe this is our version of a wake or a Shiva or is just a mix of remembering how funny she was and that she would want us to do that.
Yes, definitely.
But it's okay to be a little melancholy, but let's not make it too dour, and I think that she would appreciate that.
No, I feel like that's the opposite of something Carrie Fisher would want.
Exactly. Yeah. Like, but it's a hard balance, because you want to pay tribute to her in a way that she would want.
I mean, but woman has a Prozac pill bottle as her urn. I do not think she wanted people to be like...
That actually wasn't her idea, but I think she would have loved it.
That was her prized possession that they did.
So if anyone's not aware of... Carrie Fisher was cremated, and they wanted to bury some of her ashes with her mother, Debbie, who passed away the next day, which is just such a sad story. Although, going back to that is when that happened, when I finally kind of got over sort of the shock and the sadness of it, I was like, oh, I'm almost like extra sad in the sense from a writer's point of view. Like, oh, God, Carrie doesn't get to see this, doesn't get to see how this... ending sounds like it's out of some sort of book.
Well, it also is, I love that people, I mean, it was, some of them were distasteful and some of them were like very perfect and funny,
mm-hmm.
where it was like, for fans of Postcards from an Edge, this is the most like, my mother can't let me outshine her moment that possibly could have happened.
Yeah.
Which I was like, that's funny because that's their whole dynamic and relationship.
And
was,
again, Carrie would appreciate that kind of humor.
Yeah.
Like, and so it's like, oh man, I can't believe you're not here for this, even though it makes no sense. Like, a lot of time after, I kept thinking, like, oh, I want to hear her take on this, even though it's impossible. Like,
I wanted one sassy tweet. Like, I just wanted a tweet about it to be like, well.
Like, I had hoped that she had written something that when they, you know, opened her will, that, like, made some reference. And it's like,
it's like, if my mom dies right after me, well, not I even can't that, even, like, have but that just, like, moment.
So 2006, you know. Here, fill in the blank year, was pretty bad. I died. How was yours? Like, you just sort of, you're so used to her commenting on her life that it's sort of this abstract idea that I know is not serious. That, like, oh, I kind of wanted to, like, hear her take on it. And the same thing with the urn was, it was her most prized possession. And Billy and
Todd.
Todd, thank you. I almost called him Eddie.
I know. I was like, Todd.
Thank you. That would be bad. We're like, not, they couldn't find anything appropriate. And they thought this would be appropriate. So it's not necessarily was like her idea, but you know she would love it. And it's like, oh man, I wish you could see this.
Those weren't the ashes that went in with her mother, were they?
I think they were.
Okay, because I didn't know, but it looked like he was walking back. So I don't know if they just brought
ashes or not. I have no idea. And it's nothing I think.
I didn't know. Yeah, I feel like that would be the funniest thing. Like, to end Carrie Fisher's life is, like, the urn that they put in with Debbie Reynolds is a Prozac pill. Like, because you know Debbie Reynolds would be like, like, she'd be so mad. She'd be like, why? Carrie? Carrie's like, here you go. I'm the Prozac pill bottle.
Yeah, so I'm not quite sure because it's, like, it's not an urn. And he was holding it like a little baby, so you can't really, like, put it on a shelf somewhere. So I don't know, and I don't think
they'll probably let us know. I'm sure she probably had that on a shelf.
I'd be afraid it would fall over.
You do know there's stands. You could have put it in a stand. I would have left it on the shelf.
Okay, all right. I have not thought that far in advance about Carrie Fisher's ashes.
Oh, God.
So why don't we start with, which we've told in, I think, parts and, you know, sections on the show, but here we can do it in one sort of shot, our each personal story history of our love, Carrie Fisher. So why don't you start?
Everyone knows when I was a little kid, my brother showed me Star Wars, and I always liked the girl. I always liked Chewie because he was a dog, but I always liked the girls. Like, I was Padme when I was in, like, the second grade, because that's when I think Phantom Menace came out. I don't remember when Phantom Menace, I was, I think, 8, because I think it came out in 99.
99, yeah, it did.
So I was 8.
I don't know why I know that, considering I don't, like, or have seen the prequels
I dressed up like Padme. I had, like, the red dress and the things, and, like, I had always been, like, and, like, my little niece knows Princess Leia, and, like, when I met Carrie, I, like, sent her the picture, and she's like, oh my god, Princess Leia's older, like, but knew it was Princess Leia because of me, and she's 6, never seen Star Wars, but, like, knows all of the characters and things because of me, and, like, but, so I always just loved Carrie Fisher, and I didn't read her books, so I got a lot older, and so this year when we went to New York Comic Con, like, I only went because Carrie Fisher was supposed to be there. And then so she canceled our day, and I was devastated. And so then we bought the tickets to Bright Lights, and then she re-added our day again. So I, like, got on real quick and bought a photo op. And now I'm really mad because I was like, I don't need to do the autograph signing. I'll do it later. And I didn't get the glitter. And so now I'm mad I didn't do it. But, like, I at least got the picture. And it was awesome because, like, you get, like, basically 2 seconds. You have to, like, go in, you take a picture, and you leave. You can briefly talk to Carrie Fisher, and you can tell, like, after we did the book signing, she wants to talk to everyone and anyone.
Yeah.
So the fact that you have to go in is, like, insane. And so I walked in, I was like, okay, how do I make an impression but also get, like, an awesome picture? And then I had, like, been contemplating the whole day whether or not I wanted her to flip off the camera with me. Because I was like, oh, I don't know, like, I'm always going to have this picture. Do I want it to be me and Carrie flipping off the camera? And I got in, I, like, looked at the guy when I walked in the door and was like, if I asked her to flip off the camera, is that okay? Like, if her and I flipped it off. And he went, oh, she's gonna love that. And then I walked in, and then I started a trend, and, like, 4 other people did it, like, behind me, because I did it. And so I was like, oh, that's fucking great. Like, I started a whole trend. Everyone has these pictures of them flipping off the camera with Carrie Fisher. And so then I, like, left, and I was like, okay, that's great. And so then we went to Bright Lights.
We did, which was a really amazing experience. Uh-huh. For those who, maybe this is your first time listening to the show, we were able to go to the New York Film Festival at Lincoln Center, which we didn't realize was the premiere. We knew she was going to be there for a Q&A, so where there's video on our Instagram, we'll put it on our website, of the red carpet.
Yeah.
And she tap danced. We got a call from Debbie Reynolds, which was amazing.
Yeah, if anyone has the actual, like, footage of the Q&A, I would really like that.
The only thing that I could find, which I will post, is
the Debbie Reynolds.
The Debbie Reynolds call, yeah. The picture for, I took a picture for tap dancing and it was blurry.
There's a tap dancing video too.
There is.
But I've been trying to find my question. So it was really cool because, of course, someone asked her a question that was inappropriate, which now is funny because the question was about whether or not she slept with Harrison Ford, and then the book came out.
It was before the book came out.
Yeah, and so it's funny in retrospect, but at the time it was, like, cringeworthy because we were sitting behind Marissa Tomei, and I was like, oh my god, Marissa Tomei is here. Why are you asking this question? And so then...
which is something we should probably say more often.
Yeah, yeah. Marissa Tomei is here. Why are you asking this question? And so I was like, I don't want to ask a question. But, like, in the movie, which now a lot of people have seen, there's a quote where she's at a Comic-Con and Carrie says, "I'm nobody's hero, Leia is, and I'm the closest thing they'll ever get to Leia." Mm-hmm. And, like, it was so sad because the next cut is, like, this woman explaining why Carrie Fisher is her hero, not Princess Leia.
And not in front of her, no, too. No.
It's
the thing.
Like, she's not near her. And everyone was always like, "Oh, I love your work." And they don't, or they say, "You're my hero," and they don't explain it because they just say, "You're my hero," and, like, obviously got, like, flabbergasted, but don't. So she thinks it's just Leia. And so I rose my hand and was like, "Hey, I have a question, but before I do that, you said something in the movie and it really broke my heart. You said that you're no one's hero. Leia is, and that's just not true. You've been my hero for as long as I can remember." And I was like, "And I just wanted you to know that." And so then it was the weirdest experience of my life because people, like, started clapping.
It was amazing.
And I was like, I'm confused. Like, I just sat there and was like, I'm so confused.
It was a great moment. I hope that someone does have it on video. Although, they probably record those things for posterity.
Oh, yeah.
So they might have it somewhere. Maybe it's not posted, but maybe in the future it'll come out.
Yeah.
Well, my personal story is a little bit longer in sense of, like, my age, I feel. Like,
not... Well, you met her... Well, wait, hold on. Because let's talk about the signing, because then it segues into the last time you saw her, too.
That's true. Okay. Now, something else, too, if we want to just... track back to the festival, that was an amazing moment too, was those of us who are fans of Carrie or follow her on Twitter know her obsession with Coca-Cola, but I think the average fan is probably not, you know, familiar with it. So there was this great moment where we didn't realize, at least I didn't, that there was, like, sort of this balcony above us in the theater.
We were at
the Cannes Film Festival, and so when it was over, they put a spotlight up. And she had a can of Coke, and she just sort of, like, cheered towards everybody with, like, a sly look on her face. And it was too fast. I didn't get a picture, but it was so funny.
It's also a little weird, just to segue before I go into the signing.
Yeah.
It's weird because she followed me on Twitter, and, like, I remember I was like, "Oh, my God, this is insane." Like, I remember the exact progression of tweets that got her to follow me on Twitter because it started with,
talk about that, because she had a big Twitter following, and there were a lot of people out there who felt a real personal connection to her because of Twitter.
Yes.
And not just because she would maybe like their picture or maybe talk to them, but she also, from what I hear now, sent private messages to people.
No, she could never figure out messages.
She did. I have a screen cap.
Show
you. Yeah, so she figured it out. And there were certain people who were lucky enough to have private message with her, and she gave them advice about maybe they had bipolar or they had a relative who was a drug addict. And when we get to a fan letter from someone who had that experience with her, I can read what she wrote, and it's really beautiful. So she really...
she connected with people.
She really
Twitter.
Connected with people, yeah. So
I'm like, the thing is, so it started because I was watching something, and it was, like, Stevie Nicks. And as I was sitting there, I was like, "God, her, like, Stevie Nicks and Carrie Fisher are so alike to me." Mm-hmm. And maybe it's, like, the era that. Or the way they look, like, they just like, and it was funny because... The other day, my friend, her idol is Stevie Nicks, and she was dressed like Stevie Nicks, and I had on, like, some dumb outfit with, like, bangle bracelets on, and I was like, "Yes, Stevie Nicks?" She goes, "Yeah, and your girl and her are the exact same." She's like, "Me and you, the new Stevie Nicks and Carrie Fisher," because it was literally, like, she was dressed like Stevie Nicks, and I looked like, I was in glasses and some weird outfit, and I was like, "Oh, okay, I'm the new," I was like, in that moment, I was like, "Cool, we're Stevie Nicks and Carrie Fisher is exactly who the two of us are." But, so I did that and she liked it and I, like, flipped out. Then I tweeted something else and she liked it. And then, like, it slowly just became a progression of me tweeting stupid shit. And I have no shame, so I'll tweet someone and be like, "Yo, you should follow me because I'm funny as shit." And
it works a lot of times.
I did that and I said, "I'm funny and this is also my phone background." And it was Harrison Ford in, like, the Speedo from People Magazine. And she instantly followed me.
Oh, that was it.
That was it.
I thought it was because that's how I found you. You did those really hilarious.
No, she's
side by
the
side.
One that made that happen.
Oh, okay.
So what happened
was,
like,
everybody what you used to do.
So as a joke, one time I had just watched Working Girl, I think, and I was sitting in my bed. And there's a picture of Working Girl where he wakes up in the bed and he like looks really good for just waking up.
Yeah, it's
and
a
so
movie.
I put, "Which one is me?" And it's Harrison Ford waking up in Working Girl, and then me, like, with a blanket over my face and, like, my eye half shut. And Carrie Fisher retweeted it. And so then every once in a while I would do them, and she would retweet, like, four, like, a couple or like them. And so I've deleted a lot of them just because it got to the point where I was like, "These are insane. I'm getting rid of them." But the ones that she liked, I kept. And so then it was really cool because she'll like people's dumb tweets or, like, retweet jokes and stuff. But there is something really special is when she, like, I would tweet about, like, oh, hey, guys, I have my graduation show from this, my improv class. Like, come, da-da-da. And, like, she would like it. And so it was, like, really cool because it's like, oh, like, she also looks at everybody's happy moments and's like, oh, I'm going to, like, cool, this person is doing something special and like that.
And I think she knew how much that small little token meant to people.
Yeah, like, definitely.
I know that you talked about being so happy to be able to tell her, you know, during that Q&A and having everyone applaud because she needed to know that. And it doesn't feel like it in the film. And it was something that was in my head when NPR took the three of her interviews from 1990, 2004, and most recently and played them, which they do a lot when someone passes away. And it's really sort of interesting to see or listen to, I guess. And in 2004, they asked her, oh, have you ever been to these conventions? And she's like, oh, I went to one. There was, like, this woman who told me that I inspired her. And I went, to do what? What do you do? She goes, well, I'm a lawyer. And she didn't understand how Princess Leia or her had inspired this woman to be a lawyer. And I think that she finally understood that, maybe going to them more. And that sort of makes me
warm to my heart. I think she understood at the end more. Like, just to segue into it. So the last time we ever met her was the signing for The Princess Diarist. It was fucking cold. We were outside forever.
We didn't know we would be stuck outside in the line.
And I have my denim jacket that says Nasty Woman, has my Han and Leia pins. I just, like, was like, and it says, like, fuck you and stuff. And I was like, I'm wearing this to meet her. I don't care how cold I am. So I, like, had, like, 80 different layers in my hands going up to meet her because I was like, I want her to see my jacket, but I also have, like, a million other fucking things I'm trying to carry.
And we brought, like, her a gift.
Yeah, we brought her a gift.
And you were like, I can't give it to her. You give it to her. And
I geeked out and was so afraid for some reason. But, well, because I wanted to look at her and the Q&A was, like, so far and I didn't get to talk to her. And, like, I had that moment and she looked at me and was like, thank you. And then, like, it was funny because Carrie gave me some, like, bland answer to my question. And then Todd Fisher, like, him and I had a moment where he was like, this girl's a fucking movie dork. And, like, he was like, nah, she knows movies. And he was like, she had Buster Keaton's hat. And I was like, yeah, like, in the audience. So it was just funny.
I don't know if this makes sense in context to anybody.
The question I asked was, like, Debbie Reynolds has this movie collection of, like, all these old classic movie costumes and props. And so my question was, out of the whole collection, what was your favorite? So Carrie was like, oh, Marilyn's dress. And I was like, of course. Like, that was not a question to anybody about whether or not that was an awesome piece. But, like, I, like, had clearly kind of wanted, like, a, what, like, weird piece did you guys love? And I guess Todd got that and also knew that I was probably a dork. And he goes, she'll love Buster Keaton's hat, and said it. And I was like, yes. Me and, like, five other people in this movie theater give a shit about Buster Keaton. But, like, anywho's. So we walked up. Lauren can tell the gift portion, but we walked up and I told her again. I was like, hi, at the Bright Lights premiere, I got to tell you you were my hero, not Princess Leia. And she goes, oh, well, we can both be your hero because Leia is me. And I was like, yeah, but Princess Leia is royalty. She's beautiful. She gets the guy. I was like, I'm a short girl with a loud mouth who can write. I was like, so I've always been more, like, I always related to you more than her. And so then Carrie and I will, the moment happened, and I think my, like, all auditory functions just, like, shut down in that moment.
Yeah, you had to turn to me and go, what did she say to me?
Because I was like, what? Because she goes, well, you're a beautiful girl, so you'll find a hot Han Solo one day, then you can be both me and Leia. And I was like, and then proceeded, I was like, thank you. And then, like, literally rushed Lauren out of the line because I was like, I can't stand here anymore because I'm going to just fall to the ground. And at that time, I thought, well, it's okay. I'll get to see her again.
Yeah.
Nope.
She actually, that was November 22nd, and she collapsed on December 23rd.
Oh.
So, and I think that's another reason why it felt like such a powerful blow. Because we had just seen her. She wasn't just someone on a screen. She was a human being. Someone actually took video. We handed off our cameras to someone to take pictures, not even knowing they would take video.
Yeah.
Of us meeting her. And, you know, I had met her a couple times before, but most of the times was this year.
Yeah.
And I remember thinking, even at the time, I was like, this is weird.
In a succession of 2 months,
Yeah,
we saw. Well, you saw her once earlier in the year when you went to the catastrophe thing. But then
I went
three times in the span of 2 months.
So I got to go to the catastrophe panel, which was amazing at Tribeca. So that was one. Then
which is in like April.
Yeah,
April.
And then I did go down to the little area and walk around. I did see her signing autographs. I saw her there, and then we saw her at the premiere, and then we got to meet her. I had previously seen her Broadway show, but I didn't go afterwards and meet her. And then when The Best Awful came out, it was the first time I met her at a book signing, which I thought was so funny because, well, actually, I probably should say this for the end of my story for it to make sense. But she felt more real to us, I think.
Yeah.
And I think any time that you maybe have just seen someone who was so full of life and is such a large personality and so funny and seems to be giving so much of their energy, famous or not, and then to find out a month later that they're dead, it has this sort of just insane. I don't think it feels real to a lot of people who she meant a lot to, whether they met her or not, but it had this sort of odd. I don't want to discount anyone else's feeling, but it felt even more impossible.
Well, here's the thing. It doesn't matter. Okay. Last year was hard for a lot of people because, like, especially, like, for me, I kept making jokes that literally 2016 was knocking off my childhood one by one, and then, like, the end was, like, the finale of the fireworks, because it literally, like, started with David Bowie, and Labyrinth was, like, one of my favorites.
Yeah.
Then it went to Alan, then it went to Prince. Like, it was, like, one by one just knocking off my childhood.
Well, for me, it felt like, particularly after the election, I was, like, really, the wind was taken out of me, but I was, like, I'm going to do this. I'm going to move on. And there was just something about this one that I went, 2016 has broken me. It was like this last straw of just like all of the wind had been taken out of me. I stopped listening or reading the news. Like it just, you know, when she collapsed, a lot of people were talking, you know, a lot of posts and pictures were hope. Obviously that's something that's connected with her. And it was like this last ounce of hope. It was what she represented in our lives, and at the end of this horrible year for a lot of people, it felt like the legs had just been knocked off you.
Yeah, no. But what I was saying was, when you were saying you don't want to discount, but we had just seen her in person. But there's a difference between just seeing someone and being like, oh my god, I just saw them, I can't believe they're dead, and actually having a hero of yours die. Because like for my family, like when Leonard Nimoy died, everyone called my brother and they're like, are you okay? Like, cause he's always been, there's like him, Shatner and Nimoy were like his heroes. Like he saw Shatner in person and like
you know
flipped out. Where it's like, Carrie is that, where it's like, that's my hero. And I had people sending me like, my condolences.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, that's weird. But like,
but you understand.
I
like,
get it. But like,
if enough of your public persona is attached that you admire this person, that you look up to them, that your friends send you, like, literally, all my friends were like, I'm so sorry.
Yeah, I got condolence texts from, like, my cousins. And I was like, I mean, I get it, but it's just weird that I got the condolence.
And I have to say, like, at first, like, the whole thing upset me because of Carrie, because of her family. Like, that was the biggest thing that I kept thinking of was her family. And I felt selfish. I was like, you know, and I go through this a lot with famous people, I think. I don't know them. This shouldn't be about me. It should be about their family. But there were also these sort of really amazing tweets that people were saying, no, like, it's okay. Like, you are mourning the influence that they had on your life. Like, it's okay to mourn a hero of yours, even if you didn't physically know them.
It also is one of those things where I think, especially with actors, not like, I'm not saying like famous actors, but I'm saying people who want to be actors or who strive to like be in movies and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
We have an added layer to our heroes because a lot of us want to work with them someday.
Sure.
But and I put that in, like when I made the post about it, I was like, there is a part of me, like I got to meet her. I was like, and I'm very lucky that I got to meet her.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a part of me that died a little because I have always dreamt of, like, oh my god, one day I want to work with Harrison Ford, one day I want to work with Carrie Fisher, I want to work with these people, and that door just slammed. And it's, like, it is a little selfish, but it's also, like, there's that added, like, that dream I had just died without my control. Like, it was like, I had no control over that situation. It wasn't that I didn't work hard enough. It's not, it wasn't that I didn't do something. It was literally, it just ended abruptly. And so I think that's an added layer that a lot of people had to, like, struggle through. Because a lot of her fans were, like, inspired by her to, like, pursue their dreams. And a lot of those people happened to be writers and actors and people. And so, like, that's a door that everyone just had closed on them.
But
like,
I don't think you can discount the people who
I'm not discounting them.
Made them want to be a lawyer, made them want to strive to be a powerful, strong woman. I mean, I was so happy that when, this is a terrible sentence now, but that when Carrie passed away, that there was just as much stuff about Princess Leia as there was about her writing.
Yeah.
And about how she was a feminist icon with herself and how honest she was about fighting with bipolar and drug abuse and being a woman in the industry and being a woman in general. As well as the character she played inspired a lot of women because she was a powerful, strong character who didn't need saving.
Yeah. It was also a really cool moment when it was like, guys weren't getting it. And I understand why guys weren't getting it.
Everyone's going to have their own reaction.
My favorite, no, guys just didn't get it. A lot of guys were like, why are you going to mourn one Star Wars actor's death over another? Because they're referring to Kenny Baker. But my favorite thing that happened was every single woman banded together and like, don't know what she did for women. And like, that to me meant almost more than any art. Like,
absolutely.
That meant the most because it was like, it was every woman out there being like, no, you don't understand. And one, like, when she first had like, just had the episode on the plane, a guy, like, someone put something about Princess Leia and he quoted it and was like, she's not just Princess Leia, she also doctored a bunch of scripts. Like, don't discredit her work.
Yeah, that was great.
But here's the thing, that also discredits a ton of her work. So I quoted it back and I was like, she was also an accomplished writer. She was a mental health advocate. And I was like, if you're going to talk about Carrie Fisher, talk about everything she did. Don't talk about her things that she did for Hollywood. I was like, because she did so much for women and so much for mental health that, like, I feel like it's not offensive, but it's like, I feel like it's very discrediting to her to just be like, well, she was a great script doctor. And yeah, Princess Leia was great, but she also did a bunch of other stuff.
Sure.
And some say that other stuff. Like, say what she did, because people don't know. People think she's Leia, or they think, oh, well, yeah, she did doctor some scripts. Like, she helped the Blues Brothers and stuff like that. And I'm like, no. That's not all she did.
She did? I thought all the research that I came about, she really didn't do script doctoring.
No, I'm saying she was in.
Oh, in Blues Brothers. Gotcha. Okay.
And I think by just baking, like, that guy, I was like, well, yeah, you're right, but you also left out, like, half of her other stuff. Like, you can't call somebody out and then not be complete yourself.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of misinformation as well. I mean, I sort of was coping during the time we didn't know what was going to happen because and I'll go into more when I tell my story in a second. It didn't seem good to me. I wanted to help other people be positive and I wanted to be positive, but my gut was saying this didn't seem really good. Was someone had taken a screen cap. They didn't realize they'd probably just found it of a script from the making of Empire Strikes Back. And it was of Irvin Kershner's script notes.
Mm-hmm.
And someone wrote, oh, Carrie Fisher was so amazing. She script doctored Empire Strikes Back because this person had heard that she had script doctored the prequels. I mean, had script doctored a script and didn't know that it was the prequels. It's like a game of telephone. Like one person says one thing and it becomes something else and misses information, how fake news starts. And I think my way of coping was to be like, contact everybody. So I apologize. This is my way of coping and being like, well, actually she's an amazing writer and she's my hero as a writer, but this is not her, and she loved Kersh as a director and would have wanted him to get credit for it. And it ballooned until finally there was articles that were like, this is a hoax. Like, it became like, oh, it just went out of control. And I realized later, I think that was sort of my way of sort of coping with that. But can I tell my story? Okay, so when I was a kid, I did love Star Wars. It meant a lot to me. I had a Hoth Princess Leia action figure that I used to bite on the nose. I don't know why. I guess it was better than sucking my thumb. But then I think, like, I hadn't really seen it since high school, and it meant something to me in my childhood. But I realized the majority of my life, it was about, for me, Carrie Fisher as a writer. And I can't remember the first time that I knew that she was funny, but I quickly sort of fell in love with her wit, and I remember cutting out a picture. It was now my favorite picture because I think it reminds me of my childhood, from Entertainment Weekly, and it was her with like a feather boa, if you've seen it, with like the colors, and putting it like I did a lot of collages when I was a kid, and putting it in a collage and then saving a bigger one in my collage box for like a special occasion, like I needed that one. So I looked at that picture a lot growing up, and then having my mother take me at like 14 or 15 maybe to the used bookstore and getting a copy of one of her books to read. And I don't know why I didn't get Postcards from the Edge. Maybe they didn't have it. Or I know I was really not into first person at the time. I don't know. Or maybe I thought, oh, I'd already seen the movie. I don't know. But I left that bookstore with a copy of Surrender the Pink, which became one of my favorite books. Which is funny to me also because it's about relationships. And there's no way at that time that I could have related to being in a relationship. I was a very late bloomer. I was a big nerd. I didn't really start dating until I was older. But this book, just the way it was written, and I, you know, sort of the witticisms and the way that she turned a phrase, I was telling you before we started, was like, oh, maybe I should read like my favorite part of the book. What's my favorite part of the book? Well, I remember this amazing scene that I always remember the most of her hanging out in her ex-husband, who's probably Paul Simon, I don't know if this actually happened, hiding in his closet while he's home with his new girlfriend, listening to them because she snuck into his house and they came home. And she describes picking at the skin on her thumbs. And I remember it being like so detailed, and it really stuck out in my mind, and it was just a sort of a funny moment. And I went back and I was like, I can't really read this out of context. It actually doesn't make sense. But like that really sort of stuck out in my mind. And I know a lot of people now have been quoting, if my life wasn't funny, I'm sorry, if my life was, oh my God, I'm now so overwhelmed that I'm forgetting it.
No, it's, if my life wasn't funny, it'd just be true.
And that's just unacceptable. Okay, great. So I had it right. From Wishful Drinking, but she had been saying that for a while. And so that quote, I used to have like, we put like brown paper, you know, in your school books. And I would just fill it with quotes. Quotes really meant a lot to me. When I graduated high school, my mother gave me a book of quotes. And so that quote meant a lot to me because I was bullied a lot and I was having a real painful time. And this is before I really knew about a lot of the details of her mental illness and her drugs. I think I knew a little bit about it. I was too young to really understand the concept of it. And that quote, I feel like, got me through middle school and high school because I thought, yeah, like, I'm just going to have a sense of humor about this and I'm going to get through it. And then when The Best Awful came out, I had just moved to New York, and there was a book signing at Barnes & Noble, and I got to go. And I'm sitting there, and they have these sort of papers that say, you know, no memorabilia, you know, only the books, only things sold there. And these two people came up, and I can't remember if, I don't think they were dressed in character, but they had 8x10s of Princess Leia. And they picked up the paper, and they read it, and then they left.
Because they were autograph hounds.
Well, maybe. But I didn't know that at the time.
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't know that this was a thing. And I thought, oh, you know, at least stay and listen to her read. Like, I'm a real fan of Carrie Fisher. I'm not about Star Wars. Even, you know, it was stupid. And then we get in the line and I say, you know, you make me want to be a writer. And she quotes Yoda to me and I don't get it. Because it had been so long since I'd actually seen the movie. Even though I said recently when I put on Empire Strikes Back, I remembered everything. Like, I had seen it so many times.
But she literally said, do or do not, there is no try to her. And Lauren did not get
Didn't get it. And so, like, I just gave her, like, this sort of weird face. Like, I didn't even say anything. And I was like, okay. Like, you'd think I would just, I said nothing. I just gave her the weirdest face. And I walked away. And then, I'm sure a couple days later, I'm telling the story to a friend, and I couldn't remember the exact quote, and they quoted it back to me, and I was like, yeah, how'd you know? Because it's from Star Wars, Lauren. I was like, oh, okay. And so then I went and I read all her books. I also remember going to the library in middle school or high school and taking out Delusions of Grandma and reading that, and then probably being way too adult for me, but really just sort of falling in love with her words and her as a wit. Like, there's something that I would love to read. I really think that she was a humorist. And there's this great quote.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The best is about, like, with her death, she said, she goes, when I die, I want them to say she drowned in moonlight, strangled by her own bra.
Yeah, but explain that. Explain why she said that for people who don't know.
Oh, it's in Wishful Drinking. I honestly don't remember. I just know the quote is in Wishful Drinking. Reason, I haven't read it in like
the reason
a
that
year
she said that was because when they were filming A New Hope, although it wasn't A New Hope at the time, it was just Star Wars, George Lucas came up to her and said, oh, you can't wear a bra.
There's no underwear in space.
Yeah, and she's like, well, why? I'll bite, you know, why? And he says, well, because there's no underwear in space because your body expands.
Oh, that's right. And it would
you would get strangled by your own underwear. So she said, go ahead.
She said, when I die, I want them to say I was drowned in moonlight, strangled by my own bra. And so what I really love about everyone right now
is being so great.
Everybody
about it.
Is saying at the end of every article, they explain how she died and what's going on. And it says she died drowned in moonlight, strangled by her own bra. And I was like, that is like, and everyone on Tumblr especially is like, oh, she knew. I'm like, she didn't know. That was just Carrie.
Oh,
like,
people weren't believing it?
No, people were saying she knew that she, no. They're saying she knew that like people would need a laugh and say that when she died.
Oh, I see.
I'm like, no, it's not that because she didn't think that highly of herself. She literally was just, that's her. And she was funny. And she's like, I want to say this and see what happens. And so she did. And now it's like, everyone is saying as her in her obituaries.
No, they're honoring her that she would
want
like that in there.
Yeah, like you're drowned in like strangled by her own bra.
And it's really a great tribute to her that people are doing this. But here's something that I wanted to read. So George Burns, who was considered a humorist, like someone like Mark Twain or Dorothy Parker, even. Who a lot of people are comparing her to, which I think as well, that she was the Dorothy Parker of our time, is that someone who makes you laugh is a comedian. Someone who makes you think and then laugh is a humorist. And I believe that that was Carrie Fisher.
Yes.
And that's another reason why I think it's just so damn hard, because that brain is gone.
Yeah, she's not, wasn't just a comedian. She wasn't just somebody who, like,
she was so sharp and strong. And when she said something funny, a lot of times it had this sort of underlining reasoning to it. Like, resentment is like drinking poison and expecting the other person to die. Like, oh my God, yes. I think that makes it even harder because there was just so much more, not just life for her to live, but like what I said before was I'm expecting her to comment on her own death.
Yeah. Like, I'm like, where's the comment? When she gonna tweet it?
So I was lucky enough to interview very briefly Maria Thayer, who is a wonderful actress who some of you may know from Forgetting Sarah Marshall. She was recently had an arc on the Mindy Project years ago, Strangers with Candy, and her show actually just got renewed for its third season, Those Who Can't. And she was lucky enough to play Carrie Fisher's daughter in a movie. So why don't we quickly go to that interview? So I'm here with Maria Thayer, and she was lucky enough to, in 2005, play Carrie Fisher's daughter in a TV movie for Oxygen, although it was a Hallmark movie as well, correct?
I don't remember. I don't even remember. I was reminded on Facebook when I posted a story what the name of it, which was Romancing the Bride, but I didn't remember even the name of the, that's how bad my memory is. I only remember this story is because I told it so many times after it happened.
So why don't you tell our audience your experience, you know, working with Carrie on this film? I think you told a really beautiful story on Facebook, which is how we got connected.
Well, it was, I sort of went into a couple of things. Maybe 12, 13, 14 years ago, maybe a little bit less than that. Whatever it was, I was still coat checking in New York City, and I was very excited to get this job. It was, as you said, an Oxygen movie. I was very excited to meet Carrie Fisher, and I was playing Lara Prepon's the daughter of Carrie and the sister of Laura. And I assume that I got it because we both have red hair. But when I got there, Laura Prepon had dyed her hair blonde. So we all were like this really weird mismatched family. And we stayed in this like crappy resort in Acapulco where you couldn't even swim because there had been like a sewer line that had exploded. And so the whole ocean was just full of it was brown. It was just brown. It was not very appealing to look at. So anyway, so my first dance set, I was very nervous, and it was, you know, I was very nervous to kind of, my, of course I'd seen all the Star Wars movies. Of course I and my family is big Star Wars fans. So I was really nervous to meet her. And, you know, the director introduced us and she was very, you know, pleasant and, you know, but it was very just like, nice to meet you. Nice to meet you. And I get really, nervous, especially around people that I loved when I was a kid. Like I once did a movie with Molly Ringwald and could barely speak to her because I just like loved her when I like really loved people, you know, when I was a teenager.
Yeah. We talk about that a lot on the show actually, is that there's, at least I believe this, and we've sort of come across as talking with viewers and going through, Harrison Ford's movies and Carrie, is that exactly. I think that when it's about something about certain ages in your childhood that just, you completely become that age. I think when you see these people again.
Yes, 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 yes. It was like meeting, I didn't feel like I was 20. I felt like I was like 10 meeting Carrie Fisher. But very soon after that, you know, we were just waiting for the lights to be set. And I was sitting in cast chairs near her and she turned to me and, you know, with that very direct voice she has, she said, "Guess which one of these four people I haven't fucked." And I've thought a lot about this since, you know, she's her death and, you know, how thinking about how I felt. And I just, you know, I was shocked, but I was just, it was like, I was shocked that she said it. I was shocked that Carrie Fisher was talking to me, you know, like it was a lot of things. And all I wanted was to be cool in front of her and not look like I was. I mean, at this point, I don't even know if I personally sweared in my life. I was just like, it was such a shocking thing to say. And then she just like, without any preamble besides that, she said the names of four people and all of them were really famous. And and I guessed one of them and she said wrong. And I guessed another and she said wrong. And then I guessed another and she said wrong. And so the last person, which was Richard Dreyfuss, I was like, I guess that's the one person that she didn't, I guess, sleep with. And then I just probably, I mean, I don't totally remember it, but I just laughed. I'm sure I just laughed nervously and then didn't have that much left to say because, you know, she was Princess Leia
Were you familiar with her comedy and her writing at the time?
No. I mean, I knew about it, but I didn't know like, that was like the most shocking thing that anyone had ever said to me probably until then. But you know, she was like, I also wrote about this. She's also the first actor that I've seen do this particular trick. I don't even know if anyone, I've never worked with anyone who else did this, though I've heard stories about it, which is when, you know, the camera's on both of you in the master shot and then they turn to get your close up. So in your close ups, it's just you. So, but usually almost always the other actor stays and does their lines with you. So you're still doing the scene, even though the camera is just on you. But Carrie Fisher, she would just try to get out of, it didn't always succeed, but she tried to get out of her, of when the camera was on me or anyone else, she would try to go back to her trailer because she didn't want to be on set. So I ended up acting a lot with this. We were filming in Mexico and a lot of the crew was, you know, from Acapulco and most of them didn't speak English because they were in a totally different country. And so I ended up doing a lot of my scenes with this young Mexican grip who I wish I remembered his name, but I don't, who could barely, like really had a very loose grip on the English language. And I was doing scenes in English with him, pretending like he was Carrie Fisher, pretending like Carrie Fisher was my mom. But that sounds bad and it was not, that's not good behavior for on her part, but she was also so charming and so open and generous. I mean, it was, she told story after story after story about Star Wars, which she didn't have to do. She told that guy, I can't remember, she had just had somebody die in her bed. Do you remember that story?
Yeah.
But she was just like, that had recently happened, I think. And she was just like, I remember her, we had a scene in a, we had a lot of scenes in hotel rooms because we were in a hotel in the movie. We were staying in a hotel. And I just remember her like laying on the hotel bed, probably just during like time when they were setting up the shot, and just like laying, just like lounging there, like just regaling everybody with the story about this guy that died in her bed that we'd only just read about in the paper. Like she was an amazing storyteller, a really generous person. Like I tell the story about the not showing up for not doing the turnarounds because I think it's funny, and also I think it adds to it. But she was, you know, she also like gave me her phone number at the end of the time there and told me to call her when I was in Los Angeles. Like she was a very generous, obviously really funny, interesting brained person.
Yeah, that seems to be something that's coming out a lot lately, and things you sort of heard spattering of, but there's a lot more stories that confirming that she was very generous and obviously very funny. And one thing that I thought was also very funny when I first read your story, I don't know if you're aware of this, but there's sort of this infamous story, particularly around like UCB and some comedy people, that when she was on 30 Rock, she said something similar that she said to you, which was, who in this picture of three men have I not fucked? So it sounds like maybe not something that she said to everybody, but
that was one of her lines. I, you know, that she also said something to me that I read also on somebody also said it on someone posted something that someone else had written on Facebook that she's complaining about how when she died, it would just be about Princess Leia. Which I had forgotten, but a friend of mine reminded me that I had told him that. And she put, as she said it, she put her head, her like fists up to her, the sides of her head, like Princess Leia buns. Like she like, so was angry about it. And of course it happened, but how can you help it? She knew that and was frustrated by it, but she also told all these stories about Star Wars, which I've forgotten now, but I know, like, and laughed about like how, in the same story where she said she would never escape Star Wars, her driver in Mexico, the guy that drove her to and from set, was named Chewie.
Yeah, the universe is just throwing it out there.
So she really couldn't escape it.
Do you feel like, I mean, I know you were, you know, with her for a very short amount of time, but do you feel like you learned anything as a person or as an actor, you know, I don't know what's earlier in your career having worked with her?
Well, I mean, I do think that you know, she was I think that a lot of times when you're on set, the most famous person or the biggest star or the number one, you know, they call it, it sets the tone for what the production is. And I think, you know, as I've said, there was some bad things that she, you know, some unprofessional things that she did, but also the sense of fun that I've been on sets where the person is miserable. I mean, I'd much rather be on a set with Carrie Fisher than somebody that is miserable and it is professional, but miserable. Like she made every day really fun that she was on set just by her, spirit, you know, and her, you know, she's just great to listen to.
As a fan, do you have a different way you feel you will remember her as opposed to her personally from her work?
You know, I love that I don't know if you've seen that audition tape from, I love audition tapes. There's one from Star Wars and she was, you know, her screen test or audition for Star Wars. And she's so contained at a young age, you know, she's so strong. She's actually like weirdly, I feel like a lot of young actors, and I used to do this, is they don't use their real voice, you know, and she was using her real voice. And I just mean that like people, you know, they just do it some kind of weird voice, you know, there's just a million ways to protect yourself. And I think people use that and she didn't. That's one of the things that I remember from just like knowing her as a fan.
Well, awesome. This has been so great. Is there anything that you feel like you haven't mentioned that you'd like to say?
No, I mean, no. I'm thank you so much for having me on this, on your show.
Thank you so much. And I know that our show is very niche, but if there's ever a Harrison Ford movie that you would like to talk about.
God, Harrison Ford. He was what, I mean, I don't think it's out of like now I, he was one of the people that she said, which now ever, you know, she wrote.
Well, now we know. Yes.
Yes. But he was one, and he was by far the most exciting to me personally, because he is very exciting.
That's the thing that sort of cracks me up, is that was also one of the men that she mentioned to the 30 Rock people. It apparently was in, you know, early previews of her one woman show, and then it was cut, probably, you know, for, you know, legal reasons. How come nobody knew this? She was telling everybody because they were being respectful, which is very nice.
Yes, I guess so. I guess so.
Thank you so much for doing this and giving us your time.
Thank you. No, it's my pleasure. It was nice to meet you.
Same here.
Thank you for having me on.
You see, I'm what psychology journals refer to as batshit crazy. It's a delicate mix of bipolar disorder, which I'm able to control through serious medication, and completely untreatable case of I just don't give a shit.
So we've been talking a lot about how Carrie connected with her... I just hit the table that the mic is on. That's great. With her fans on Twitter. And we asked you guys to send us some of your tributes about what she meant to you. And also, I think what a lot of these talk about is the personal connection that she did have with people. So we have some of these tributes. You wanna read one?
Sure. This is from my friend Noor. You can find her on Tumblr at Hans Organas with two A's. Han Organas. Sorry, Noor. And she said, I had the pleasure of meeting Carrie at New York Comic Con. I remember telling her she inspired me as someone with mental illness, and for about 2 minutes we commiserated about anxiety. As someone who rarely had this conversation with someone, it felt absolutely surreal and comforting. And then she told me something that resonated with me and has helped me through devastating loss. She said, people like me who get up and keep going are the real heroes. It is because of this I continue to be comfortable with myself. I owe her a lot for my progress, and I'll continue to improve to keep her memory alive.
I've been hearing a lot in sort of old interviews with Carrie is that, one, speaking the truth about the issues that she went through was not just helpful for others, but also cathartic for her in a way that she could be outside of herself, you know, looking on it. But also she said that it's kind of lonely, and when you can meet somebody else who has the same issues. Like, there was this great story on Tumblr that I think I read before she passed, where someone who was online in LA at the book signing, and she said, you know, I have bipolar, you know, and they were talking, and she was like, so how are you today? And they were, and she said, oh, I'm a little depressed. And I was like, wow, I wouldn't say that to someone that I didn't know, you know. And I think for her it was a way to, you know,
relate,
yeah, and have someone else, because it was very lonely. So this one's a little bit longer. This is from Taylor Barnett, who actually won our first contest. This is sort of a nice way to start. So I may not be able to read all of this, but there were some really great parts. So Carrie Fisher was my hero. There's simply no other way to say it. But for me to tell you about my love for Carrie, I have to tell you for my love of Star Wars. I've been a passionate Carrie fan since I first Star Wars when I was 10 years old, and I admire Leia and inspired to be her. Plus, I also wanted to kiss Han Solo. Being taken to a galaxy far, far away was a mind-blowing experience and something that I'll never forget. Then I saw The Force Awakens. I didn't really have any strong feelings toward the new films, but I was excited to see them when I went with my mom and stepdad. I walked in a passive fan, and I left as a Star Wars nerd. It was basically a religious experience. I learned about her drug addiction and her struggles, and manic depression and anxiety. You see, I have depression and anxiety. I've been getting treatment for almost 2 years now, and as supportive as my friends and family have been, I still felt somewhat alone. Then I started reading her books, Wishful Drinking, Shockaholic, Postcards from the Edge, all of them. I laughed and cried and related to Carrie in a way I hadn't related to anyone before. I saw so much of myself in her writing that inspired me. The past year has been tough for me, mental health-wise, to the point where I almost committed suicide. I'm getting help and I'm getting better, and a big part of what got me through this point was Carrie. I watched her interviews and HBO special whenever I need a laugh, and I read through her Twitter feed whenever I needed small doses of her sharp wit, in emoji form, of course. She'd always come into a group chat, so I was talking about, on Twitter from time to time, and hearing her tell us that she loved us meant the world to us. Seeing how funny and honest she was about her life and mental illness gave me hope, because if she could come out stronger on the other side, maybe I could too. When she died, it hit me harder than anything else because I felt like my hope died with her. Now I know that's not true because as crazy as it sounds, I feel her with me. I know she is at peace wherever she is, and that makes me happy.
I feel like every time someone's like, yeah, Carrie's at peace, she's like, nah, bitches, I'm still Carrie Fisher. I'm still up here. Like, I'm still feeling shit. She's like, all five of my emotions are still happening wherever I am.
I think that maybe some people who, you know, were not privy to this or didn't follow her on Twitter, you know, or I don't want to say casual fam, but maybe knew her from other ways, didn't know this part of her and how much, you know, she meant to people.
Well, that's why when we say casual fam, we don't necessarily mean a casual Star Wars fan.
Exactly,
it could be the biggest Star Wars fan, but he doesn't understand and I say he because it's normally men, don't understand the specific power that, like, Carrie Fisher herself had and what everyone feels for Carrie Fisher. And so I feel like I'm not saying no man gets it, because there are so many who are, like, devastated, and, like, a lot of my male friends literally messaged me and they're like, I'm sorry. Like, and they understood where I don't think they got it because it doesn't apply to them. And that's it's a little mean to say, but it's true. It's like Carrie didn't apply to them. They thought she was hot and that was the extent of it.
Well, I think there were a lot of people, I just listened to something where a man did talk about that it wasn't about that. So I don't want to lump that.
No. I'm saying, but there's a vast majority of men who don't understand. They just don't, they saw her as a sex symbol and like that was like the extent of it.
And in a sense, that's going to be in any sort of, you know, subculture or ethnicity or experience that you come from. There is something that, because that's not your life and the way that you fit into the world, that you're not going to either be aware of or have the same feeling, even if it's explained as being, oh yeah, I understand that. But I also think there are a lot of people who weren't, you know, male or female, who weren't aware of that, who now want to know. You know, I've had certain people who I've said, hey, you know, if you actually do, like, I'm happy to give you a tutorial in the world of who Carrie Fisher was outside of Star Wars or including Star Wars. And that's also something that I think is, you know, if you can take something from the end of her life, is that it all sort of came full circle and she was able to see how much people really loved her. And then people who, or maybe only knew her from Star Wars, all of a sudden now knew about her as this amazing wit and about her work and her writing.
Yeah.
This is something from Dee, who actually designed our business cards, and was someone who was in a group chat with Carrie. And so I'm going to read a little bit about what she wrote, and then I'm going to read the actual screen cap she sent me of one of their conversations. Oh. Yeah, this is great. Okay. She starts off with, "Say your weak things in a strong voice," which is one of my favorite Carrie Fisher quotes as well. And I've heard it done many different ways, like, say your weakness in a strong voice. It's empowerment, and no matter what you're going through, that means a lot to me as well. So this is her letter to us. "The beginning of 2016, I was in the process of moving, packing my house and trying to get all of those things organized, thinking I was moving to Nashville. I saw the trailer for the new Star Wars movie called The Force Awakens and was floored when I saw two old familiar faces, Carrie Fisher and Harrison Ford. Now, if you know me, you know I am a straight-up sucker for nostalgia, so I knew I had to go. But still remembered being 10 years old and going to the theater to see Empire Strikes Back, and then a couple years later, Return of the Jedi." And then she goes on to talk about how she started to discover Carrie Fisher and went into a YouTube hole, as we all have. She goes, "I knew she'd written a few books, and I sold plenty of them when I worked in a bookstore in the early 90s, but I honestly thought she was still a drug addict and she couldn't get it together." A lot of people think that.
Mm-hmm. There was a tweet about that.
Oh, I remember.
A girl right after she died said, "I don't know why everyone's praising her. She was just a drug addict." And everyone went nuts.
Yeah.
But I specifically was like, she was a drug addict because she existed in a time where they didn't diagnose disorders and she was trying to basically medicate herself.
Yes, Stephen Fry talked about that. Yeah. A lot of people of her age who had bipolar were, even her father was self-medicating himself and mm-hmm. got into drugs. Anyway, back to D. But what I found out that wasn't totally true. She was a drug addict, and she did struggle with that probably all her life. She was an advocate for mental illness since she had bipolar. She also helped drug addicts and took in many people. This is interesting, too. You know, mm-hmm. she had people stay in her home, letting them stay in the guest house or on her property until, this is hard. It's on my phone. Sorry, guys. Until they could get back on their feet. She was awarded in 2014 for her work with the LA organization called the Midnight Mission. And like her mother, Debbie Reynolds, helped many charities and reached out to those in need with seeking attention for her efforts. Carrie was a real person. She had been born into celebrity status, but she didn't ask for and desperately wanted to be accepted by showing people her fame didn't make her any more different or special than anyone else. This past November, I had the opportunity to visit New York and for the first time and a friend and get to a book signing Carrie was doing there on the spur of the moment. The meeting in New York was fun, and she was funny and kind and even remembered I was coming from Atlanta. This is from the private chat. As we discussed in another message just prior, at one point I agreed to have a picture for the guy in front of me with his cell phone while Carrie was signing the book, and I was a little slow, being unfamiliar with this brand of phone, and Carrie yelled from across the room, "Did you get it?" I laughed to myself and was able to quickly retort, "I think so." A dream come true moment for me for sure. Something else that I've seen a lot is that she really got how important this was to people.
Yeah.
And, you know, looked people in the eye and talked to them and made sure they got a picture, even though Barnes & Noble and most of these places are like, no pictures. She did not give a fuck. She wanted you to have her moment with her.
She didn't give a fuck. When we went, she literally, like, they were like, "Carrie, you need to hurry." We gave her that gift, and she was like,
"I'm opening it now."
She goes, "I know you guys said to hurry, but hold on." And just, like, open this thing. And everyone behind her, like, is like, "God, we just told you have to go faster."
And commented on it, and then would display all the gifts, like, out for everybody to see.
Oh, it was so funny.
I do want to add this, though, because it's about the private chat. Let's see, where was I? Oh, yeah. Then when it was my turn to meet her, I told her I was from Twitter, and then my handle, blah, blah, blah. Oh, sorry. I really want to get the whole thing in here. I told her I came from Atlanta, the capital of Coca-Cola.
Mm-hmm.
And then her head shot up saying, "You're the one coming from Atlanta. See, I remembered." I smiled and she wrote, "Love to D. Thanks for coming from Atlanta, Cokeland. Love, Carrie Fisher." Then as I was driving home that night before Thanksgiving, Carrie had taken the time to respond to my request for info to help in dealing with a family member who had a drug problem. This is something she could point out to me to help me that I hadn't tried, or any advice she could give. I would like to share her reply with you now.
I was like, here, I can read it since you read that whole thing. It says, it's from Carrie Fisher, has that little dog. "It is very difficult to get through an actively using addict, especially one entrenched so long. He alone is responsible for his addiction, and he alone can help himself. Don't be so hard on yourself or blame yourself. Easy for me to say, not so easy for you to do. Try, though, for me, and then you. Try as long as he's alive, there's hope. Take care of you."
And that's something, too, I think that Carrie really said, too, the whole, you know, try for me. A lot of people I've seen on Twitter who are really devastated, who admire her because she helped them understand, you know, their illness. There's this great line in Postcards from the Edge. I mean, there's great lines, but I watched it again recently, where Shirley MacLaine, and I say this because the movie is very different from the book, is like, "It's your time now. You need to enjoy your time."
Mm-hmm.
And it's very sad that Carrie is gone, but she would want you to have your time now. You know, it's okay to grieve, and don't let anybody tell you that you can't have your moment, but she would want people to be able to get through this. Like, there's this great quote, I forget where it's from, when she talks about being bipolar, and she says, better me than you, better than I'm going through this than you have to go through this. Like, that, people talk about that she loved to give gifts. That was her favorite thing.
Mm-hmm.
She loved to just bring you something. She just seems to be a very genuine, generous, kind soul that will be very missed.
And just on, like, a closing note, if you guys... Bright Lights is really hard to watch, even... It was hard to watch when she was alive.
Yeah.
I refuse to watch it right now. I need to wait.
Yeah.
I watched Wishful Drinking for the first time. I had read the book, but I'd never seen it.
Oh, it's brilliant.
And my dad called me, and he goes, "Oh, guess what's on HBO? And I assumed he was going to say Bright Lights. And I was like, "Oh, I've seen it. Yeah, it's really good." And he goes, "Oh, you've already seen Wishful Drinking." I was like, "Oh, no, I thought you meant Bright Lights." And so I watched it, and there's a moment, and it's so sad, and I started crying. And she says, I Can Hear the Angels Now.
Oh, yeah.
And then, like, it's so funny, and so Carrie Fisher is 2 seconds later, an ambulance noise happens, and she says, my ride's here, and she's singing Happy Days Are Here Again as they take her up on a stretcher. And then her ride is literally an ambulance at the end, and she gets in the ambulance and drives off.
I was in the orchestra when I saw it at Studio 54. I didn't have the best seat, but I was at least in the orchestra. And when she takes the guy on stage to have sex with her sex doll, and I use quotes because
it's didn't do that in the HBO special.
Oh, they didn't?
No,
oh,
that is not
I haven't
the HBO
seen it
special.
In a while. Okay.
So, that, and they cut out the Marlboro Man.
Oh, well.
Because the Marlboro Man was in original productions of it. And
it wasn't
they,
in the production I saw.
Okay, because they, I
it
know
was
it was
in
the
LA.
Tour. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And they cut the Marlboro Man out completely.
So the Marlboro Man is Harrison Ford. And that's why, and I talked about that with Maria, is that I can't believe that no one really knew this because it's been out there. But it wasn't when I saw it. But yeah, she mentioned a man she had an affair with on Star Wars, but she called him the Marlboro Man.
And she literally described Harrison Ford.
Yeah, and everyone figured it out.
Yeah, they're like, oh yeah, what crew member is this guy? Yeah, yeah. Like, I was like, it's Harrison Ford.
But so
and that's why he made her cut.
I haven't seen Wishful Drinking all the way through recently. I think I saw it a couple months ago. And sometimes it's hard to remember the memory of being there and also the video. But the sex doll that is in Bright Lights, which I don't believe
she
it's
has
actually
it.
She does have it. Yeah. Yeah. So it comes from the ceiling, and she invites someone on stage to fuck her. And then she picks someone. Usually I'm told later on that it's usually someone who's gay, apparently. I don't know how she figures that out, but she's got good gaydar now,
except
I guess.
For her.
Yeah, because of her husband.
For Brian.
Yeah, but I read this thing that said, oh, yeah, she tries to pick someone, you know, who. So it's like, I don't know. Anyway, I read that somewhere. To come on stage and then the curtain comes down, like, right before, you know, they're able to. And it was a couple rows in front of me, and I was so jealous of this person. And that was why I remember later when I found out, someone was like, oh, don't worry, Lauren, she never would have picked you. Like, to come on stage and have sex with her sex doll.
Well, that's my favorite part is when, like, she picks the woman in the front row and to be like, what happens when people get mad at each other who are married? She's like, divorced. And then she questions the person for, like, the whole show. That, like, whoever
oh,
that person ends up being is like, oh, you're screwed.
Yeah,
like,
Fire,
she's just going to question you.
She brings out one of my favorite parts is a big blackboard with all of her family members and then talks about everything that happened. And every time it's a divorce, she points to the person and goes, and what happened?
And they say, they got divorced.
And then near the end, she goes, oh, that was a trick question. She died.
Yeah, for her father's, like, fifth wife.
But for anyone who's seen Bright Lights, the legs are crossed on this big doll.
Yeah.
And so it comes down, and I turn to my friend, and I go, that can't be a sex doll. Its legs are crossed. How would you have sex with it? And I looked it up. And it's not actually a sex doll. But she said it was advertised as a sex doll. But, like, literally, where is the hole? The legs are crossed.
I think she was being a smartass.
Of course she was being a smartass.
She owns that doll, so she was probably like, we're just going to use this because I'm not going to go buy a sex doll.
But maybe someone on eBay thought that, I don't know. But
who knows? But, yeah.
I guess there are different things you can do with it.
Yeah, but watch Wishful Drinking if you haven't. Watch Bright Lights. Just like
it's all on HBO Go. You can also get a free subscription for, like, I think, like, a month or something and, like, check it out. I also would recommend Mark Hamill wrote beautiful essays in Entertainment Weekly and The Hollywood Reporter.
Mm-hmm.
Jolie Fisher wrote something beautiful for The Hollywood Reporter. And then Sharon Horgan and Rob Delaney wrote also just gorgeous essays in The Guardian.
If you haven't watched Catastrophe, I highly suggest it.
So good.
Rob Delaney, and it was very sweet when she died, he said, like, the way he talked about it was, like, don't feel bad for me because I knew her because I was, like, all of you.
Yeah.
He was, like, I was a fan of hers, and then I lucked out and got to work with her. And he's like, so don't feel bad for me. We are all the same. And then he goes, actually, do feel bad for me because I lost the person I messed around with during takes on set. Like, that was his thing. It was like, you know what? No, do feel bad for me.
That was what
I
was so interesting is as emotional and how beautiful these were. You have Mark and Jolie who have a different relationship with her.
Yeah.
And then you have Sharon and Rob who were fans first and then got to know her professionally. Yeah. And Sharon was one of the last people to, like, see her, at least in the UK. Like, they had dinner together and she almost canceled. So it's a different sort of dynamic. To see, and but there was something about the women, even though they're all beautiful, there was something different that Jolie wrote, obviously as her sister, and Sharon that just seemed to, I don't know, as a woman get to the heart of her, and it felt more real to me. I was like, oh, I now feel like I know a little bit more about Carrie. But my favorite thing, maybe that's how we can end, is Jolie Fisher said that even her text messages were great and funny. And that she was telling her how, you know, she's in this show in L.A. and she's dancing her ass off and she should see her. She'll take pictures for her. And she wrote her, dance as long as you can, then keep dancing, but remember to change your shoes. So I hope that we have given you a funny, tasteful and tasteless
moment,
tribute to Carrie Fisher. A little bit of melancholy, but a lot of fun. And
it's sad, guys.
Yeah, it's really sad. I feel like a part of, like you said, like a part of your childhood, but she was the kind of funny I wanted to be. Mm-hmm. And that was a really big influence on my life, and I need to not discount that.
No, she was one of the ones that literally taught me that I could be, and I am, when I say these things, I'm not saying, oh, I'm like her, but I'm, she had the same kind of unfiltered, I'm going to say what I feel, that
I think we all want to be like.
Yeah, and I know that I, like, sometimes I say things and I'm like, oh, no, I shouldn't have said that, and I don't want to apologize for the things I say, because she never did. She says what she wants, and she says what she feels, and that's it. Mm-hmm. And then I want that. I want to be able to say, like, and I have it to a degree, but she was one of the reasons why I was like, no, I can say what I want and say how I feel and not be afraid or sad because I did.
Yeah, and I think I realized after she passed that I had lost a lot of that lately for, mm-hmm. like, whatever personal reasons or things that had happened that I had sort of forgotten that part of myself. And I was coming towards it, like, the election helped and certain things helped, that I was just like, I need to start not giving a fuck again.
Yeah.
Or more than I have. And I definitely feel like I've been doing it, that I've been, even though I was like just about there, like I was trying to do, that was my big like goal this last year, was to sort of get back to that. But this was sort of like the last piece for some reason. And when she collapsed, I went on Redbubble and I bought a sticker for my phone that says "Stay afraid, but do it anyway."
Yeah. I have.
That's awesome. She's got the rebel.
This is Leia, and it's Leia, but she has Bowie. The Bowie rebel. Or she has the Bowie Ziggy Stardust star on her face. Great.
Yeah. So I feel like I've been taking more chances in my life and with my comedy.
Yeah, 2017 is the year I'm not giving a fuck. I'm not going to let people tell me I can't.
Yeah. So that's a great way to end. Don't let anyone tell you that you can't, in honor of Carrie Fisher.
Live life like Carrie Fisher would want you to. I needed to finish that thought and didn't.
Yeah, and please stay for a little tribute that I've put together for us to say goodbye.
When in disgrace with fortune and men's eyes, I all alone beweep my outcast state, and trouble deaf heaven with my bootless cries, and look upon myself and curse my fate, wishing me like to one more rich in hope, featured like him with friends possessed, desiring this man's art and that man's scope, with what I most enjoy contented least. Yet in these thoughts myself almost despising, haply I think on thee. And then my state, like to the lark at break of day arising from sullen earth, sings hymns at heaven's gate. For thy sweet love remembered such wealth brings, that then I scorn to change my state with king.
Just tell 'em I'm checking out.
Hi, my name is Carrie, and I'm an alcoholic. Oh, sorry, wrong group. Well, actually, maybe not. George Lucas ruined my life. And I mean that in the nicest possible way. Every time I look in the mirror, I have to send you a check for a couple of bucks. Nietzsche had Harrison in mind when he said, Stille Nacht, Heilige Nacht, alle schläft. Well, maybe not alle schläft, but the Stille Nacht, absolutely, definitely. Shit, there's my rhyme. Lather up with Leia and you'll feel like a princess yourself. And ultimately, he consoled her with his penis. This I get. Princess Leia, like I'm supposed to go, yes. Resentment is like drinking the poison and waiting for the other person to die. I sent out birth announcements, which read, someone summered in my stomach, someone's fallen through my legs. To make an infant omelet, simply scramble sperm and eggs. One of their big souvenirs, which is a kangaroo scrotum. You know how they say religion is the opiate of the masses? Well, I took masses of opiates religiously. As you get older, the pickings get slimmer, but the people sure don't. Whenever I start to talk, Harrison gets nervous. There's no room for demons when you're self-possessed.
Instant gratification takes too long.
Keep in mind, I am a Pez dispenser, and I'm in the abnormal psychology textbook. Who says you can't have it all? If my life wasn't funny, it would just be true. And that is completely unacceptable.